As always, it's wonderful to see your faces, to be able to sit with you. Can you all hear me okay? Okay, good. Good. So, this week's Torah reading, Tzav, contains the commandments that the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Command Aaron and his sons thus." So these are the instructions for the rituals for the priests, and they come in three major themes of keeping the fire burning, the vestments, the clothes, and the sacrifices. And I'd like to say a bit about each of them and a little bit more about the sacrifices, and then leave a good amount of time for discussion. So, at the very beginning of the parsha, there are two instructions about keeping the fire burning, that the sacrifice on the altar is to be kept going all night. We leave it on all night, and in the morning, the ashes are swept away, and a new fire is started. And the Esh Tamid, a perpetual fire, shall be kept burning on the altar, not to go out. And so, of course, this metaphorically could have many meanings for us. What does it mean to keep the fire burning? That in our practice, there always has to be some passion, some strong motivation to keep us doing the practice. Otherwise, who wants to keep up doing the same thing over and over unless there's a passion and excitement about the way bringing close attention to each of these steps in the process? We need to have that passion. And so another way to look at it is what keeps us from getting burnt out? The fire should never be burnt out. So burnout is something that in today's vocabulary, it's more it has a more direct meaning than keeping a fire on the altar going. So that's what we can think about, is what keeps us from being burnt out, and how does our meditation practice keep us from being burnt out? How does religious practice keep us from being burnt out? Or how can we not get burnt out on the rituals of religious practice? So I have some thoughts about that that we can talk about. I'm sure you all do too. And then the clothes, the vestments. It's important to look at the root of that word and how we use it in being invested in, we're invested with certain powers and authority, certainly certain authority, that and the clothes show that we've been invested with a certain authority, and the way we put them on, the way we wear them, the way we treat these vestments is a sign of our being invested with authority. And of course, we could also be divested of that authority. So vestments really, when we look at the instruction for how you put them on and what they mean, it's really a signal of the authority that has been invested in the priests. And of course, I never paid much attention to, what it means that on the vestments are not given a lot of attention in Jewish practice. Just on the high holidays, we pay closer attention. But in general, certainly how we dress the Torah, the vestments for the Torah are something we pay a lot of close attention to. But so much of my understanding of the meaning and importance of paying very close attention to ritual come not from my Jewish practice, but from my Zen practice. So in Zen practice, each time you take on a next step as a teacher, as a leader, you have to sow your own, your own vestment. You, at first, it's just not the whole robe, but as you progress, you sow more and you wear more, and the way you embroider it, there's a tremendous amount of detail and attention to detail in the embroidery and every little stitch, and then the way it's put on each morning when you take on the priestly role. What's, I think, most interesting about these rituals and how you do it is that when I first learned them, I mostly felt like I was afraid of doing it wrong, and someone would catch me doing it wrong, and I'd be caught, and I'd be embarrassed. And the whole thing was about just my fear of doing it wrong. And somehow, in the course of being invested with the privilege of doing certain rituals in the Zen retreat, I realized that there was great joy in doing certain rituals, like how you present the bowl or the incense or light the candles, how you do that, that there could be great pleasure in doing it in a very attentive way. Because when you have to pay such close attention to what you're doing, you can't really be worrying about anything else. And you're completely absorbed in just this beautiful ceremony that has had meaning for people over many years, even though it's changed and morphed in many ways. And if anyone wants to read more about this idea of the art of these rituals, I recommend the Karen Armstrong book, The Lost Art of Scripture, which is all about the meaning of the pageant and actually going through this embodied practice of ritual throughout the ages. So I once had a discussion with Eben Leader about this aspect of the religious practice is doing. And he said that if you notice, you look at the instructions for the ceremony, and it's not about first you sing this prayer, then you say that, then you chant this, then you discuss. It's all about what you do. These original instructions in Torah that we read are just about what you do in the service, not about prayers or chants or anything that we think of as the service today. And so when we get to this third topic of sacrifice, I'm going to talk about the kind of positive and negative feelings that we have about this whole concept. But I think that the important thing is that it was an embodied practice. It must have been extremely compelling. The sounds, the sights, the action, the actual life and death importance of this ritual. At the end of one of these ceremonies, you must have really felt you've been through something, you know? And how often do we go to a religious service, and at the end we say, "Oh, wow, I've really been through something." I mean, it sometimes happens, but I think the idea of actually doing and enacting something is part of what drew people to sacrifice. And of course, today we say we offer prayers rather than animals or flour and oil. So whenever we talk about sacrifice, I like to quote Reb Moshe, who says that the word sacrifice is not such a great translation because the korbanot come from the root karov, how we get closer to this sense of the divine, and that it's more like, and I hope I'm quoting you right, Reb Moshe, it's more like you go to a friend's house for dinner and you bring wine or flowers, that you are giving a gift that communicates, I care about you, I'm thinking of you, I want to be close to you, we're connected. So all of these rituals, and particularly the sacrifice, are about connection. Now you could say, well, why do we have to sacrifice animals or send flour and oil up in smoke? And so historically, sacrifice was something that existed prior to all these rules and the revelation. And so you could say in many ways, well, it was a pre-existing ritual that was then given a sacred purpose. But why would it be, why would people continue to do this? And, you know, you can't get away from the idea that it brings you closer to the mystery of life and death. And there are some teachings that say that this is about recognizing that God is the giver of life and the judge of death, which is a bit paradoxical because here we're taking control and killing an animal, but it's also conceived of in some ways as recognizing that God can give life, which we are not able to do on our own without, you know, we can't make animals have babies, and we're not in complete control of this. So there's some recognition here of God being the one really in control of life and death. And what I had not read before, I hadn't recognized it before, but in the instructions for the sacrifice, there is a laying of hands on the sacrificial animal that is called, given the word, smicha, right? And we think of smicha as, you know, when someone becomes a rabbi, that they the authority invested in the teacher is then becomes invested in the student who becomes the rabbi. That there's the laying of the hand symbolizes something in me is going into you. You are coming to hold something in me. So there's an indication that we are saying, yes, this animal instead of me, maybe. I know you could take my life at any moment. Maybe you'll take this animal instead, or I'm willing to give you the animal. I know you're in charge. So there's something about that that I hadn't recognized before, but really in some way is a way of both acknowledging our powerlessness, but also taking that power. And there's something about that that is probably beyond our understanding, but was pretty compelling because people did it for a long time, but not forever. And so that's what I'd like to focus on now, is along with this Torah reading that's all about God telling us to do sacrifices, then we have the prophets, several of which talked about why we shouldn't do these sacrifices, or we shouldn't think that that's all we needed to do. And so I think some of the most powerful words come from Isaiah. So I'm going to share that with you on the screen, and we'll also read it together. Okay, so can you all see this? Okay, so Isaiah says, "What need have I of all your sacrifices?" says God. "I am sated with burnt offerings of rams and suet of fatlings and blood of bulls, and I have no delight in lambs and he goats. That you come to appear before me, who asked that of you? Trample my courts no more. Bringing oblations is futile. Incense is offensive to me. New moon and Sabbath, proclaiming of solemnities, assemblies with inquiry, I cannot abide. Your new moons and fixed seasons fill me with loathing. They are a burden to me. I cannot endure them. And when you lift up your hands, I will turn my eyes away from you. Though you pray at length, I will not listen. Your hands are stained with crime. Wash yourselves clean. Put your evil doings away from my sight. Cease to do evil." And okay, that's what we're not supposed to do. Here's what we're supposed to do. Learn to do good, devote yourself to justice, aid the wronged, uphold the rights of the orphan, defend the cause of the widow. Come, let us reach an understanding, says God. Be your sins like crimson, they can turn snow white, but be they red as dyed wool, they can become like fleece. If then you agree and give heed, you will eat the good things of the earth. So, you could say, well, here Isaiah is saying we shouldn't do sacrifices. And I think the real message is that a sacrifice isn't going to substitute for being a good person, for doing the right thing. That we really have to bring attention to not just to ritual, but to how we actually live our lives. And we have in Jewish practice Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim. And Hasidim, that we have our study of the scriptures, our prayer practice, and our good deeds, and also the pillars of Buddhist practice are the right thinking, the learning the scriptures, the study, it's Dharma, Sangha. Anyway, and then so there's the Dharma teachings, that's what Dharma is. Then there's also the ethical practice, and then there's the mindfulness practice, the attention to the mind, which we could say are similar to Torah, Gemilut Chasadim, and Avodah. So I think that it's important for us to really reflect on what are the helpful or hurtful, helpful rituals in our lives? How can they be used to keep the fire burning? Or what keeps the fire burning in our practice? And how does it help us to live lives of compassion and caring? And so there's lots to discuss, so I look forward to our discussion.